Coming up on the Rami LaVie podcast, the New York Knicks are going to the Eastern Conference semifinals. They advance, and not only that, but a couple hours later, we find out that after they dominated the Cavs in five, they will have home court advantage as the Miami Heat pull off a stunning victory, also in five games, against the number one seeded Milwaukee Bucks. This feels like the 90s again. Knicks and Heat in the playoffs. I was in diapers. It's going to be physical. It's going to be tough. That's how these teams play. By the way, all four games the Knicks won against the Cavs. They held the Cavs under 100 points. The Rangers have a huge, huge game. The biggest game of the season is tonight in New Jersey. And also, Aaron Rodgers was introduced as the quarterback of the New York Jets. Lots to talk about. All that and more coming up next on the Rami LaVie podcast. Stay tuned. It starts now. One of the things I talk about on this podcast a lot is the stigma against mental health. I think, unfortunately, there has been a stigma, but we're slowly breaking it. And if you think you might be feeling depressed, stressed, anxious, overwhelmed, or maybe you just want to talk to someone, today's sponsor, BetterHelp, is here to help you. BetterHelp offers licensed therapists who are trained to listen and help. Talk to your therapist in a private online environment at your convenience. There's a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's 20,000 plus therapist network that may not be available in your area. You just fill out a questionnaire to help access your specific needs, and then you get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Plus, you can exchange unlimited text messages, and everything you share is completely confidential. So I talk about on this podcast how your mindset towards things changes everything. One of the things that I learned in therapy was that join the 2 million plus people who have taken charge of their mental health with an experienced BetterHelp therapist. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/Rami. That's my first name. That's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/Rami, my first name, Rami. If you use that link, the link is in the description in the podcast notes. If you use that link, you'll get 10% off and it'll also help me out. So please do that. I'm telling you, it's worth it. Do it today.
There's something special going on right now, Julius, with the way this team's winning different games and different heroes on certain nights. From your perspective, in the locker room, what's made this team so special right now?
We really love each other, man. We really spend real time, quality time with each other, getting to know each other, and just caring about each other, and I think it just translates onto the court.
That's what this team has done well all year. They don't look too far ahead. They're not looking back. Why did we either win or lose? Make our corrections. And there's always things you could do better.
Yeah, we're in a great place, but I think most importantly, we can get better.
This game tonight shows you why the fans have fallen in love with this team. It's the way this team plays, the fight and the grit, and how they play together.
We don't back down for nobody.
Welcome back to the Rami LaVie podcast, episode 145. It is 11:26 at night on Wednesday, April 26th. And wow, what a time to be alive. What a time to be a Knicks fan. What time to be a New York sports fan as a whole. The New York Knicks have beaten the Cleveland Cavaliers in five games. They've dominated them and they advanced to the second round of the playoffs. And I was watching tonight, and I was kind of thinking to myself as I was watching this, I was at work with a bunch of Knicks fan friends, and I stayed for the game because I didn't want to drive during the game, and my shift kind of ended in middle of the game. So we have this TV wall, and everyone's watching it up there. The people who are working watching at their desks, but you know, we're all watching this. And it's one of those moments where it's like, you remember where you are, you remember what you're doing, and I remember I want to throw it back to just 2 years ago, because how rare this is and how special this is for Knicks fans. Just 2 years ago, I was on this very podcast, and I have a video on social media and still up with me yelling and freaking out about, wow, absolute madness, chaos, one win at Madison Square Garden, one single playoff win in a series that the Knicks lost in five. And that was exciting to us at the time in a weak Eastern Conference the way that was. And now the fact that they did this, they took a team with a legitimate superstar, the guy who didn't pick you, the guy who I guess he would have picked you, but the guy who gets traded elsewhere, of course, feels like classic Knicks. We're so close to getting this guy. No, we're not getting that guy. We're getting someone else. We can't get him, blah, blah, blah. And it feels
perfectly Knicks. Of course, he's going to come into Madison Square Garden. He's going to beat you. That's the guy you're going to lose to in the playoffs. And the Knicks don't just win the series. They dominate. And everyone in my life and everyone on sports talk radio and all the talking heads were already saying, all right, this is going back. You know, Donovan Mitchell's not going to be silent this entire series. He'll have a great game in Cleveland. Even I said this. And can the Knicks go home in game six? Can they win in game six at home? But no, the Knicks are like, no, we're not doing that. We're going on the road into Cleveland, and we're just going to dominate you. Last time the Knicks were in Cleveland, they lost. They played poorly. They shot terribly from the field. I said after that game that wasn't going to happen again. It didn't happen again. And now look at where we are. Think about how far this team has come. Think about how far this franchise has come. I talked on last episode about building it the right way, building it from the ground up, what they started. And look at where they are. I was listening to Bill Simmons and Ryan Russillo talk on Sunday. They do their Sunday podcast Sunday night during like late in the NBA season and during the NBA playoffs. And they did like 15 minutes on the Knicks. And I was like, they're doing 15 legitimate minutes on the Knicks. And yet that wasn't the craziest part. That wasn't the part that excited me the most. The part that excited me the most was a throwaway line that Bill Simmons had. Bill Simmons was talking about the Celtics. And he's like, you think this rotation is going to work when we have to play Brunson and the Knicks? He fears Brunson and the Knicks. He's worried about having to go up against this Knicks team. He's like, look, you look around the teams, you look at every team in the playoffs right now, and you see this team has one or two, three or four options. The Knicks have legitimate options from everywhere, and they have Brunson, who's impossible to defend. Who's going to defend Brunson? That's what they were talking about. But that's not the craziest part. The craziest part is that the Celtics can't even play the Knicks until they get to the Eastern Conference Finals, and he's just putting the Knicks in the Eastern Conference Finals. As I sit here on my couch and I'm watching Miami and the Bucks, and the Bucks have a pretty commanding lead going into the fourth quarter. The winner of this series will get the Knicks, and it's far from over that series, and we'll talk about it a little bit later. Probably after the game ends, I'll talk about it. But the fact that that's what we're talking about the Knicks in the conference finals, and it doesn't feel crazy. I know I always say expectations change. I always say you have to adjust how you think about certain things, how you used to think about it and how you think about it now. And yes, only 2 years ago was crazy that they even won a playoff game. It's only the second time in the last 22 years the Knicks have advanced to the second round of the playoffs. And the last time was in 2013, a decade ago. This is rare. Enjoy every moment of it. I'm almost like upset because we only got five games of the playoffs this year. We only got five games so far. And the Knicks are guaranteed at least four more. I get that. It's awesome. I can't wait. But now we have a layoff. Like, what do we do now? The Knicks, who would have thought that the Knicks would have advanced to the second round of the playoffs before the Rangers did? The Rangers might even get eliminated. The Knicks might go further. There's a real chance. I'm not going to let the Rangers ruin my mood today. I'll worry about that. Probably when you're listening to this, it's already game five on Thursday. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the episode as well. But for all the adjusting expectations, this was a team that was not expected to be here. This was a team that was not supposed to even be a playoff team, maybe a borderline play-in team this year. And they're now in the second round, and people are looking at them as having a legitimate chance of winning a second round. And I'm not saying they will or they won't, but that doesn't even matter. Just the way this team is looked at, it's unbelievable, and I just want to remember to enjoy it. So I went into this game thinking, and the more I thought about it, was that this was a must-win game, Game 5, in a weird way. Because if Donovan Mitchell actually gets going, and he actually starts to play the way he's capable of playing, which I still believe Donovan Mitchell was the best player in the series. He didn't play like it. But still, if you're telling me, okay, you have to start your team, who are you starting your team with? Pick one player from both teams. I'd still tell you today, Donovan Mitchell is the guy I want. I love Jalen Brunson, no disrespect. I'd probably take Jalen Brunson second, but I'd still take Donovan Mitchell first because he's still the best player. I don't think this series can really change my mind about that yet. He had a really bad series. There's no denying that. He had a really, really bad series. But when I thought about it, I was like, okay, you have to win this game. Because if you lose this game and you get Donovan Mitchell going and maybe Darius Garland continues to get hot, then you go back home and all the pressure is on you. All the pressure is on you at Madison Square Garden, at home, for game six. And that's the game. I talked about this. That's the game Donovan Mitchell will go out and dominate and show what he's capable of and make you regret not trading for him and all those things that we talk about. But instead, you go on the road and they came out. The way they came out was incredible. And I said, you have to win this game. You don't have a choice almost. And they did. So how'd they do it? How did they win this game? It started in the first quarter. Like I said, it felt like a must-win game. It was a closeout game. And your two best players, your two superstars, came out with, like, they had that look in their eye. They had that edge to them. Like, we're closing this out. This ends today. We're on the road. We came in here. It's like, it's a funeral. We're here to dominate you. And every single Knicks player on this team had that look, but it started from their superstars. Jalen Brunson knocking down early threes. And Julius Randle set the tone early. Julius Randle in only 16 minutes in this game, and we'll talk about why only 16 minutes in a second. He had 13 points, 4 rebounds, 6 assists. He was 5 of 6 from the free throw line. He kept pushing the issue, getting inside, getting to the rim, getting fouled, and going to the free throw line. His shots weren't going down, but this is what superstars do in closeout games. He's taken so much crap from all the fans. And in a closeout game, he showed up. He wasn't forcing it. He was making plays for his teammates. He knew he was seeing bodies, so he was getting multiple bodies inside. Guys were closing out on him as he would go forcefully to the rim. So he was kicking it out, making plays. That's why he had 6 assists in less than a half of basketball played. In 16 minutes, he had 6 assists because he wasn't forcing. He was letting everyone else make plays. He didn't get in his head about, oh my God, I was benched at the end of the last game and now I need to force up, start chucking shots because I need to get my spot back on this team. I need to show everyone that I'm the man on this team. He got to the rim because he knew his shot wasn't falling. He got to the free throw line because he knew he was trying to get himself going. And he let his teammates make plays around him. When the doubles came, he kicked it out to them. He had some incredible passes, some great passes, finding open looks for his teammates and making his teammates better. And by the way, he stepped up on defense too. He had this intensity. He was super engaged on both sides. He wasn't out of it. He wasn't upset like sometimes we could see him be because things aren't going his way. He was engaged on both ends, on the defensive end, and that was huge for the Knicks in that first half. He then re-injures the ankle, which we'll talk about in a minute. But he re-injures the ankle, obviously, at the end of the second quarter, at the end of the first half. And like I mentioned, Jalen Brunson also. Jalen Brunson, he's your other superstar. He's your other best player. He's knocking down threes. He's knocking down big shots. He's taking control of the game, saying, okay, I'm not going to, every time it felt like, this is what he did all series, but every time it felt like the Cavs were going to go on a run, every time the crowd got super into it, he silenced the crowd. And really, the crowd was taken out of it early because the Knicks were just, like I said, they had that look in their eyes in every single one. And RJ Barrett was a different player in this series. You wondered how it was going to translate on the road after his two incredible games at home, two terrible games in Cleveland. How is it going to translate? How is he going to go back into Cleveland? How is he going to make something happen against Cleveland, in Cleveland, where he struggled so mightily, where Knicks fans wanted him benched, where Cavs fans were making fun of him after the first two games? How is he going to go back into that building and take what he did at the Garden and go off again in Cleveland? Well, he did it. 21 points. He was 4 for 4. He had 21 points. He had 4 rebounds, 4 assists. By the way, he also had 3 fouls in the first half, which got him benched, which I don't necessarily agree with. It's something we'll talk about a little bit later when we talk about the coaching in this series. But he's 7 of 13 from the field, over 50% shooting. He's 2 for 4 from 3, which is 50%, and 5 for 6 from free throws, something he struggled with even at home in New York. He struggled with the free throws. He was knocking down his free throws when he was forcing the issue and getting to the line. Just awesome, awesome stuff from RJ Barrett. He was a different player, and he was the X factor in this series. He was a different player than he was when Cleveland saw him last, only a week ago, right? A week ago, he looked like a completely different guy than what he looked like tonight at Madison's, or at, I don't even know what they call, Quicken Loans Arena or whatever it is in Cleveland. Just an unbelievable turnaround within one series for a guy like RJ Barrett. That was just awesome to see. Emmanuel Quickley also came alive. He also, I said to my friend, I showed the video of him walking into the arena before game 5. There was like, they posted, like the Knicks posted on their social media, they posted a video of Emmanuel Quickley walking in. And I showed it to my friend. I was like, he looks locked in. He looked like he was dressed like Michael Jackson. Like, he was dressed like a superstar. Like, I got this. Like, after struggling the way he did in the first four games of this series, even though he was great on the defensive end, it was almost like, no, I'm fine. And he was aggressive. He had 11 points in the first half. He was knocking down his jumper. And it was so important in the first half for the Knicks to come out like that, for them to come out like, yeah, we're here. This isn't a fluke. We didn't just win games at home. We can come on the road against one of the best home teams in the league and dominate you on your home floor and make you feel like the series is over right now, right here, before this game even gets to the half. And it was almost a perfect half. Like, it would have been a perfect half, but the half ends in near disaster. Randall, like I mentioned, re-aggravates the left ankle sprain. And it makes you think, like, the fact that he re-injured it kind of makes you think that it wasn't fully healthy, and he's a Warrior for playing on it in the first place, and all the crap we gave him for playing poorly over the first four games of the series, well, maybe he's playing hurt. So obviously he wasn't fully healthy. And then he finally looks like he's back. He finally looks like he's doing well, and he's figuring out, okay, maybe I'm limited, but I could still do other things to help the team and impact winning. And I said he was doing everything within his power to impact winning without knocking down a jump shot from outside in this game. And it was incredible to see. And so the timing of it just really sucks that he re-injures the ankle. You're not sure if he's going to come out in the second half. And all of a sudden now it's just a 10-point game going to halftime. And it felt uncertain. It felt like now if you lose this game, you might not have Randall in game six at home. How does this play out for the rest of the series? Now you start to get really concerned about the prospect of losing this game, not only because you don't have him, but how this could turn out for the rest of the playoffs. And Obi Toppin comes out in the second half, and it was huge to have five straight points to start the second half, almost as if to say, no, we're good. And he didn't do a ton in the second half. He gave a lot of effort. He gave a lot of energy. But those 5 points to start the second half was almost as if to say, hey, no, we're fine. I think he had another three later in the second half, but that was awesome. And then at the end of the game, something the Knicks struggled with all year was closing out games. And now they have to close out a series, close out a game on the road. The crowd gets back into it. Garland's hitting shots. Mitchell starts hitting a couple shots. I think it got as low as 6 points. And the question is, who's going to step up, right? They're taking the ball out of Brunson's hands. There's no Randall. Who's going to step up for you? That's something they struggled with all season long, was who was going to be that other guy. And like I talked about early in the episode, how it seems like they have so many options, but down the stretch, who was going to be that guy who's that option for you? There's a lot of dribbling, a couple of shot clock violations, empty possessions, guys looking confused, guys looking like they can't be the closer. And Josh Hart, with his effort and his hustle, was one of the guys who stepped up. He's making things happen. I was kind of thinking about this. He's always running out in transition. There was that meme about him where the video of the guy running out of a stadium, like running up a stadium ramp. I'm struggling with talking today. I can't tell you why. It's late at night, but I'm pushing through. I'm a warrior, kind of like this Knicks team, I hope, doing my part at least. And there's that video of the guy, the meme of the guy running up the stadium ramp. I crack myself up. I'm sorry. I think I'm funny. I don't, whatever. If you don't find it to be funny, that's okay. That's too. That's kind of where I'm at with this right now. Like, I think I'm funny. I'm entertaining myself. But he runs up the stadium ramp. That's the meme. I've been spending way too much time explaining a meme that either you know what I'm talking about right away when I said it, or you still have no idea what I'm talking about. So Josh Hart, I saw the meme like every time Josh Hart gets a rebound, and it's that meme, him running up the stadium ramp. The point is that he's always trying to get out in transition, and I didn't get it. I was like, it doesn't make sense. Why is he always trying to get out in transition? Why is he always running? Like, sometimes you have to slow it down. Sometimes you have to have a set offense. But he understood that, okay, let's catch this defense while they're in transition. Let's catch this defense while they're sleeping. Let's try and make something happen instead of having to get into half court and dribble, and one-on-one basketball and isolation basketball. Let's try and make something happen in transition and get some easy buckets. And I really understood what he was trying to do in that game. So his effort, his hustle, his offensive rebounding, everything that he did in that fourth quarter was huge. But one man stood above all. One man was better than everyone else and carried the Knicks down the stretch and made sure, basically saying, we are not losing this game no matter what. I am going to make sure of it. And that was Mitchell. Not Donovan Mitchell, but the best Mitchell in this series. I know it's corny, but I thought of it in the car. I was like, I tweeted it out. The best Mitchell in this series was Mitchell Robinson. And who would have thought that with everything that Mitchell Robinson has gone through, with everything the Knicks fans have gone through with him, thinking about trading him, the injuries, the different stuff on social media, him talking about not getting closing minutes, not getting enough minutes, every little thing that has come and gone with this kid since they've drafted him in the second round a few years ago, all the stuff we knew he's capable of all along came together in one moment in one game. In this game, he had 13 points, 18 rebounds, 3 blocks, 2 steals. He had huge offensive rebounds in that second half. He had multiple putbacks in that fourth quarter down the stretch. He was awesome. There was one point where they took him out of the game where you saw him on the bench and he's huffing and puffing on the bench. He was giving it all. He left it all out there on the floor. Just an incredible game. And the Cavs had, they went small at some point, right? Because they couldn't get any offense going. So they went small with taking out Jared Allen, which is so funny because Jared Allen, the big tough guy who also had another hard foul on RJ Barrett in this game, like you're going to go hard, you're going to go small with him. As now Miami's really turning this into a game with Jimmy Butler on the bench. This is fascinating stuff when I'm watching. But wow, just as I say that, Jrue Holiday gets a steal and Giannis gets a transition foul. All right. But he looks hurt again. He's holding his back, injured back. Ah, that's not good. So they decide to go small and take out Jared Allen. And the Knicks are like, okay, we'll go smaller. We'll match what you did, which is what I wanted to see. I said this after game four when the Cavs went small. I wanted to see the Knicks go smaller. So they went with Mitchell on the floor and 5 small guys. It's easier to do with no Randall, obviously. Randall's hurt. Obi wasn't on the floor. So you had Quickly. You had you also have no Grimes, by the way. So you have Quickly. You have Hart. You have RJ. And you have Jalen Brunson on the floor with Mitchell Robinson. So the Cavs are like, oh, if you're going to go small, we'll go big again. We'll bring Jared Allen back in. And now we have Jared Allen and Mobley. Now you're not going to get offensive rebounds. And it didn't matter. Because guess who was still getting offensive rebounds? Guess who was still wreaking havoc inside? It was Mitchell Robinson taking on the entire team on his own. And on the other side, and there was one specific possession where I think Clyde pointed this out, where somebody shot a floater and it went over the backboard. It was because Mitchell Robinson came to help. His help defense was incredible. He flashed a couple times on the pick and roll, played it so perfectly where he flashes up top so that the defender can get back and then, you know, stay with the shooter, whether it was Garland or Mitchell off the screen. And then he still got back into position to go defend the roller and then also defend the rim if the offensive player still did get to the rim. It's incredible what he's done in this game, what he's done in this series. It was just something special to watch. And I didn't think this guy had it in him. Honestly, if I'm being honest, I didn't think he had this type of performance in this game in him. But he proved me and everyone wrong with the performance that he had. It was beyond special. It was a special closeout performance. When you look at those stats, and you look at 13 points, I know 18 rebounds is a ton, but you look at 13 points, you don't think much of it, but every single one of the 13 points were impact points in this game as Jrue Holiday just hit a step back to make it 10 again. And so it looks like with 7 minutes left, Milwaukee will probably pull away in this game. That was a nice move. Step back 3 on Kevin Love. And if you're listening to this now, you probably already know what happened in this game, so I should probably stop interrupting myself. But that performance, whatever it looks like statistically, that performance was one of the great playoff performances the Knicks have had in a really long time. And I talked about Brunson, but they were taking the ball out of his hands. And you think about everything I said, it was the definition of team stepping up. And so I saw somebody post this. I think it was MSG who posted this. Josh Hart, in 46 minutes played, had 4 points, 12 rebounds, but the rebounds were all huge, and 4 assists. Obi Toppin has 12 points, but it felt like every single one of the points was meaningful. Also, like I mentioned, he had those 7 points or whatever it was to start the second half. Obviously, Barrett, I talked about, with 21 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists. Brunson with 23 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. Emmanuel Quickly, 19 points, 2 rebounds and assist. Randall, obviously, what he did in the first half with his 13 points, and Robinson with his 13 points. It was a complete team effort. This is what we keep talking about with this team. You can shut down one guy, you could take away one guy, but there's always going to be someone else finding a way to impact winning, someone else finding a way to get buckets, somebody else finding a way to help them win the game. And there were so many times in this series that they proved that over and over again, whether it was on the offensive side, whether it was on the defensive side, everything these guys did was special. And credit to the coaching staff who believed in these guys, the coaching staff who put these guys in the right position, the coaching staff who made the right adjustments constantly. One of my biggest questions with Tom Thibodeau is trusting the young guys and making adjustments on the fly, not being stubborn. And when this team was 10-13 and you thought that he was going to get fired and that was it, it was because he was stubborn. And everything in this series showed that he's not stubborn, that he's willing to change, that he's willing to try new things, he's willing to adjust on the fly. And credit Tom Thibodeau, credit Johnny Bryant, credit Rick Brunson, the entire staff, every single person on that staff who obviously has an incredible impact on what this team has become. And that staff ran circles around J.B. Bickerstaff and what he's done. I mean, the two timeouts, Mike Breen talked about this on the broadcast, where the Knicks, they're scrambling around in the backcourt, and they don't, and they can't get the ball across the timeline. They have 2 seconds to get the ball across the timeline. So quickly they call timeout. And now but the ball doesn't advance because they had started dribbling. But if you use your second timeout now, you can advance the ball. And in that spot, he calls the second timeout. He understands how important a turnover, the momentum was starting to shift. So he calls a timeout to advance the ball. Eventually the Knicks get fouled on that possession and then they hit free throws so they don't come up empty on that possession. That was a really important possession for the Knicks because the Cavs weren't going away. And this is what I talked about all year long, or not really all year long, but the Knicks' resilience, the Knicks were able to come back. And every time the Cavs made a push, went on a run, and it could have gotten dicey for the Knicks, they didn't lose their minds. They didn't lose control. They stayed within themselves, and they came back and did something on the other end. And that's what separates this team from past Knicks teams. That's what separates this team from the beginning of the season. And shout out to everyone on that staff who puts these players, and obviously the players, of course, as well, but who puts these players in the right position to make these big plays. And the craziest part of it, and I want to talk about Bickerstaff for a second. Bickerstaff and his coaching. He was still searching for someone to get offense out of. And it sucks when your best player, your number one player, is out, right? He's not playing well. And that's Donovan Mitchell, is just not being himself. But whereas the Knicks were getting the most and the best out of each one of their players, it was like what made the Cavs special all year with their two bigs and how they're able to defend with Allen and obviously Mobley and those guys' effectiveness on offense. Also, what they did best this year, they couldn't get to that in this series, and Bickerstaff couldn't find a way to get to that. And he's changing up the lineup. He had nothing consistent. He couldn't rely on a single guy. And the one guy who was really good in the last two games especially was Darius Garland. And Darius Garland picks up 3 fouls, I think with like 9 minutes to go in the first half at Madison Square Garden of Game 4. And he doesn't play the rest of the game. That was a close game. That was a game that if he plays, we know how he came out in the second half of that game. If you keep playing him, even with the 3 fouls, that's more important at that point because you needed scoring. He was the only guy who had it. Jeff Van Gundy mentioned it on the broadcast in that game, and I didn't really fully understand what he was angry about. I just was like, oh, another Van Gundy rant. What else is new? Ryan Russillo explained it on Bill's podcast where he's like, look, it's not a fluid thing. There shouldn't be a rule when it comes to benching guys because they have fouls. It seems like there's this rule. If you pick up 2 fouls in the first quarter, if you pick up 3 fouls in the second quarter, 4 fouls in the third quarter, you're going to get benched. And in that spot, even though he picked up fouls, 3 fouls, you're a guard. You could go the rest of the game without fouling another time because you're a guard. All you have to do is play smart defense. Don't reach in. Like, it's not like you're protecting the rim. It's not like you're a big man who now everyone knows we could drive at you because you're scared of fouling. Just tell your guard, don't foul. Not sit him, the guy who's been the most important guy for you offensively the entire series. You're now sitting him in big spots. And again, Garland fouled out of this game. But again, he could have played more minutes if you were just letting him play and tell him, okay, don't commit these stupid fouls. And that falls on coaching a lot of the time. And he was your most important offensive player. He was the guy who was carrying you. And he couldn't carry this team. I get it. Like I said, they were searching for stuff all game long. And by the way, with RJ Barrett, RJ was arguing with Tom Thibodeau when he took him out with 3 fouls because RJ was in a rhythm. RJ was playing really well. And then he picks up his 3rd foul in the first half. He didn't have another foul the rest of the game. So the same thing there. And I think, you know, if they needed to, they would have brought RJ back in. They obviously didn't need to. But it would have been the same thing for Tom Thibodeau and RJ Barrett, that just because he had 3 fouls, it doesn't mean you have to take him out in that spot. So wow, just like what a time to be alive, though. We're talking Knicks basketball. I'm watching a game right now, Milwaukee, Miami. And it's important because who are the Knicks going to play in the next round? That's what we're thinking about. Could the Knicks have home court advantage against Miami in the next round of the playoffs? Like, that's how we're thinking right now. It's unbelievable. And yet, with all that, like, it's still crazy because there was no crazy Brunson game. I thought before the series, Jalen Brunson had a 48-point game in Cleveland earlier in the season. I was like, well, he's probably going to have to go off at least once in this series if the Knicks are going to want to win this series. I don't think he had 30 points at any point. He played really well throughout the series. He was this steady guy throughout the series, but I don't think he like went off at any point in any game throughout the series. Really, game one is the only game that you could say he went off in, but it wasn't a high-scoring game. It's just he took over at the end of the game. There wasn't the crazy Brunson game in this series. Randall was hurt, obviously, in the first four games and finally was back to himself, but only played 16 minutes in game five. Grimes is hurt, misses most of the games. We'll see when he comes back. You have limited production from Manuel quickly before game five. He was really good in game five. And yet this team dominated. They didn't just win. They destroyed. They crushed them. They came out, like I said, like a team that like, hey, we're a really good team. We know we're winning. They looked so confident. They knew right away at the beginning of this game, like, this team can't play with us. We're so much better than this team. I don't remember the last time a Knicks team, they don't care what people say. They're not surprised that they won this series in five. They're not surprised that they dominated the way they dominated. They're like, yeah, of course, we're this good. They believe in themselves. They think they're that good. And it's apparent, it's clear as day to see when you watch this team play that they really believe in themselves, that they really trust themselves. And that's something special. And I'm going to miss this team for the next few days. I'm going to go back and watch the highlights. I can't wait to see whether they're at Madison Square Garden and hosting a series against Miami, whether they're playing against Milwaukee, which I don't think they could beat Milwaukee in a series. Maybe if Giannis is hurt, I don't think they could beat Milwaukee. Just a bad matchup for them. But I'm going to enjoy the rest of this. I think they could beat Miami. But we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens the rest of the way. I'm thrilled. I'm ecstatic. I can't lie to you. I can't tell you. And just credit to the coaching staff, credit to the front office who built this team, credit to the players who trusted themselves and trusted what they're building here. This is something special. There's something special happening here. And I can't wait to see where it goes, whether they win another series, whether they don't. You know, in the NBA, there are rarely any major surprises. I don't expect this to be a magical run to the final. But the path seems clearer today than it's ever been in my lifetime since like I was a little kid in 2000, I guess. The path seems a lot clearer today. You know, can I see them beating Miami in the second round? Of course I could see them beating Miami if they have home court. Could I see them beating Boston with the way they played against Boston this year? Yeah, I could see them beating Boston. Even Philly. Like, do you really trust Philly in a conference finals? So to think that there's actually a path, just that idea that there might be a path for this team to make it to the NBA finals, I don't remember the last time I could say that. And it's not like they're doing it with these crazy superstars on these huge contracts and huge expectations. It's a team that's a fun, young team. They just didn't expect to be here. You didn't expect to be doing this. And the fact that they're doing it is awesome. And it's homegrown, like I talked about on last episode, with obviously Mitchell Robinson, Emmanuel Quickley, Quentin Grimes, RJ Barrett, Obi Toppin, and the right acquisitions with Josh Hart, Jalen Brunson, Julius Randle. It's just so special, and I'm just going to enjoy every moment of it. I'm going to watch the end of this Milwaukee-Miami game, then I'll record a little bit more about the NBA. We'll talk about the Rangers and their disappointment in their huge game five, but no clouds in my storm. Or I don't even know. I'm not sure how that phrase goes, Jay-Z. Anyway, Milwaukee just hit a huge three to go up by 8 with 3:18 to go. So there probably will be a game six in that series. You'll hear from me in a couple minutes. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. What did I just watch? That was wild. So I apologize if you thought there was going to be a transition there and it was going to be smoother, but I just continued recording on the same thing that I was just recording on because I just watched the end of that Heat Bucks game and series, and also Steph Curry just hit a crazy shot. So we have a Bucks, or not Bucks, we have a Heat Knicks playoff series. The Knicks are going to be the home team. at Madison Square Garden game one. The Heat knock off the Bucks. As I'm watching that, the comeback was crazy. And then Jimmy Butler just goes full Jimmy playoff mode. By the way, that shot, the three he took, down two, I guess it was, right? Takes a three down two, eventually gets to a 4-point game, but he takes a three down two on the curl with the screen by Bam, and terrible defense by Brooke. Brooke goes under, and it's easy to play the results and say, oh, that's a terrible shot. You took a three. You didn't need a three there, and they won, blah, blah, blah. Game over. But that's an open look. That's a look that Jimmy Butler would hit that he would want all day. Terrible play by Brooke Lopez to go under the screen, at least flash in front of him. But you think it's over at that point. Bucks go up four, hit the two free throws, and then a crazy three, and then obviously the play at the end that, if not for Middleton, it's an even crazier play, right? Because it gets thrown out of bounds, essentially. And then the Bucks miss a bunch of free throws down the stretch. They miss a bunch of free throws in the second half. And then, obviously, the crazy alley-oop inbound play to Jimmy Butler. Mike Budenholzer decides not to call timeout because I don't want a shot. Why would I want a shot before, you know, why would I want a shot when I could just send it to overtime? The Heat lose every player in overtime because guys keep getting fouled out, which, by the way, again, if only the Bucks would hit their free throws, this is an entirely different game. In the game, the Bucks attempted 45 free throws, which makes sense because every single player on the Heat fouled out. So they attempt 45 free throws. By the way, the Heat only attempted 17 free throws in this game, and the Bucks only made 28 of the 45 attempted free throws as the Warriors knock off Sacramento and take a 3-2 commanding lead in that series as they go back home. And by the way, I'm not mad about that. I think, like, if there's a team that can actually beat Phoenix, it would be a team with playoff pedigree that in the big spots wouldn't get, even though I don't think the talent is as good or it's as gelled as it was last year for the Warriors, you know, and they have issues winning on the road, but they just won a game on the road. I think when it comes down to it, if anyone can beat Phoenix, it would be them. But Phoenix is going to play Denver up next as Denver finishes off that series. But we'll get into all that a little bit later, maybe on another episode, because right now we're talking about the Miami Heat and the Milwaukee Bucks. So the Milwaukee Bucks shoot 62%, 28 of 45 from three, from free throws. And that's the difference in the ballgame, essentially. They got fouled a million times, shot almost three times the amount of free throws that the Heat shot. And they made 62% of them. And that's why he lost. Because in a playoff game, in a tight game, in an overtime game, a game that's decided by 2 points, you shot 62%. You had a chance to just win the game at the line. And it starts with your best player, Giannis, who misses a lot of free throws. Jrue Holiday disappeared offensively at times in this series. There's a million reasons why they lost this series. Also, I'm kind of scared of the Heat now. I said this before they even won the game. You have Jimmy Butler, who's playoff Jimmy, who's a guy who's going to go off in these games, apparently, and just turns into a different guy. I think Jimmy Butler is, it's just the craziest thing where he's one guy during the regular season, and he's a good player, don't get me wrong. And I had an argument with a friend about this early in the year. It's like, would you take Jimmy Butler in the Julius Randle spot? Like, trade Julius if Miami decides to blow it up? Because it looked like they were going to blow it up. They almost lost in both playoff play-in games. There was a real shot that they'd lose in both play-in games. And they somehow survive in the play-in games. They make it to a series against the Bucks, and they beat the Bucks in five. They dominate the Bucks in five. I know a lot of those games, Giannis wasn't there, but Giannis had a triple-double in game four. He was there in game five. And Jimmy Butler just turns into a different guy. And unlike the Knicks, who against the Cleveland Cavaliers, they were able to leave certain guys open in the corner, right? Just focus all the attention on the two bigs and on Garland and Mitchell. The Heat have these guys who could just hang out there, and you know they're Vincent is going to hit threes. Strus, he's going to hit threes. Love is going to hit his threes. Lowry is going to hit his threes. You can trust all these guys. You can't just leave those guys in the corner. It's going to be really interesting to see what the Knicks do in that series. And I talk about the missed free throws. One of the things I didn't mention about the Knicks that they did so well in the game was hit all their free throws down the stretch. So, I mean, that game is just a wild, wild game. But an 8 seed, the 8 seed Miami Heat beat the 1 seed Milwaukee Bucks. And they beat them in five. And I don't even know who's favored right now, Knicks Heat round two.
but just so many crazy. I'm looking at Drew Holiday made a three with 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Milwaukee made only two field goals over the next 11 minutes combined in overtime in the fourth quarter. Just one thing after another. That's just a wild, wild game and a horrendous game by the Bucks. More of a collapse by the Bucks, but you got to give all the credit to the Heat. And that last possession, Grayson Allen. If it was anyone else, I would have been upset because I like the Bucks generally. I like that Bucks team. They were my pick to win the finals. And but Grayson Allen, it's hard to root for him. So Grayson Allen not even attempting a shot. I love that. Giannis gets called for a foul on a 30-footer. Like, how do you get called for a foul there? Just so many things. I'm just looking through what happened in this game. Just a wild game. By the way, the Knicks were plus 30 in offensive rebounds in five games. So it's just a matter of a team that wanted it more, a team that was trying harder, a team that gave more effort. And now you're going to play against another team in the Heat that are the same type of thing, a team that wants it more, a team that's trying more, a team that gives more effort. But who would have thought, if I would have told you a year ago that the Knicks were hosting a second-round matchup, they were the home team for a second-round matchup of a playoff series, you would have called me crazy. If I would have told you after Donovan Mitchell gets traded, not to the Knicks, to Cleveland, that don't worry, the Knicks will be hosting a second-round playoff matchup this year. If I would have told you when the Knicks were 10-13, and now here they are, here the Knicks are, they're hosting a second round of the playoffs. And it's because of guys like Jalen Brunson, it's because of guys like Tom Thibodeau, it's because of Julius Randle, you can't forget him. I mean, what they unlocked in RJ Barrett in this game, I don't know. This was just awesome. I'm scared of this Heat team, I'm not going to lie, but that was a crazy game. Jimmy Butler's awesome. Kevin Love, you're going to see Cavs when you're watching at home. You're going to see what you're missing out on in Kevin Love. He only had 15 points in this game, but he's a winning player. And you're going to see what you were missing out on. You should have kept him. That's my opinion. Anyway, so now I've gone for 39 minutes total. What was once a shorter episode, I could do a lot more talking about the other playoff series. Maybe I'll save that for another episode. I will do a full preview of the Knicks and Heat, but the Knicks are going to be hosting. They didn't announce the schedule yet, I don't think, for the next round. But, 20 minutes ago, I 20 minutes ago, I would not have thought that I'd already know what the second round matchup would be for the Knicks. Literally 20 minutes ago, I was like, okay, we have to wait another day. Let them tie each other out, whatever, all that stuff. But now we get it. Knicks Heat, it's going to be crazy. I'm kind of lost for words on what to say about that. All right. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to take a quick break. I'm going to gather myself. I'm going to talk about two things. I'm going to talk about the New York Rangers. Little quick shift. Talk about what happened the other night at Madison Square Garden, what needs to happen tonight as you're listening to this at the Prudential Center in New Jersey in order for the Rangers to not blow this series completely. and I'm going to maybe watch a little post-game, see if there's anything else to talk about with the Knicks. And I'm going to talk about one man who was introduced to New York and became a New York athlete today. That is one Aaron Rodgers. Seeing him holding the jersey, seeing him wearing the Jets t-shirt and sweatshirt in the building actually finally made it feel a little bit more real today. So just crazy. So much just special stuff. That's all I'm going to say. I will see you guys in a minute. I'm still sitting here in some shock and awe, if I'm being honest, about the New York Knicks. And I just went back and watched that video that I put it at the top of this episode of how they got here. It's a video. I'll clip the link in the description of the episode. But this team is just, and they're about to talk about the Knicks on TNT, so I might turn this off. But they love each other. They play for each other. They're loose. I just watched the post-game press conferences. They're a bunch of clowns, but they're serious.
I don't know. They're just everything I could possibly want. I'm in love with this Knicks team. They're special, and there's something special about them. And yeah, you watch that Heat team, and yeah, you know how cool that story is. But there's something about this Knicks team that wants to make you believe no matter what. So that brings me to the New York Rangers. The New York Rangers, the other team in Madison Square Garden. By the way, the other stories in the NBA, we'll get to it on a later episode. Maybe I'll do an episode Friday or Sunday where we can talk about what happened in the Clippers series and how they got eliminated. And now it seems like it's another major injury in the career of Kawhi Leonard, maybe one of the greatest what-if careers of all time. We'll talk about that another day. The Lakers lose in that series. We'll also talk about Golden State being up 3-2, and we can talk about a whole bunch of other stuff. So all the other NBA topics we can get to. Denver obviously wins in five as well. Phoenix 1-5, Denver 1-5. The Grizzlies are not done yet, like I said. And Boston, what a shot. What a shot by Trae Young. I talk about playing the results all the time. It's very easy to play the results and say, oh, wow, Trae Young took that shot. That's a 30-footer that you probably shouldn't take in that spot down by only 1 point. But he took it. He made it. Good for him. I still think Boston will win that series, but just makes it tougher, makes the road tougher for Boston. Does anyone believe in Philly? Does anyone still believe in Philly, even though Boston doesn't look great? Do you still believe in Philly? No, I still think Boston's probably the team to beat in the Eastern Conference. You think about it. Boston, they have the Hawks still, so include the Hawks. Philly, Miami, and New York. Boston seems to be head and shoulders above the rest of those teams. But we'll talk about that. We'll preview the Heat and Knicks series at length, and we'll do all that stuff. But let's talk about the Rangers, my New York Rangers, and what was once a 2-0 lead and a dominant 2-0 lead where they outscored the Devils 10-2 in two games. And it wasn't even that close. Game two was an absolute blowout domination. And I said that this is, it's not over. The series is not over. What I didn't expect, I expected the Devils to play better. But I didn't expect the Rangers, to play that poorly. I'm still thinking orange and blue skies, all Knicks. I still can't get over that team. Wow, I love them. The fact that the Knicks, by the way, are going to outlast the Rangers in the playoffs is just wild to me. But let's talk about the Rangers. I keep teasing it. I didn't expect the Rangers to play like that at home. Yeah, game three, they were okay. But game four, they sucked. They were awful. They couldn't get anything going on the power play. And think about it. Think about the reasons they were able to score on the power play. I don't think Schmid or whatever the hell his name is played that great. He gave up a lot of rebounds. He wasn't great. He wasn't that much better than Vanecek, who's bad, but he wasn't that much better than Vanecek. He wasn't challenged. All of a sudden, the Rangers were getting dirty goals. All of a sudden, the Rangers are not getting those goals around the net. They had four power play goals on seven chances in the first two games. All of them were tip-ins by Kreider. So what does that tell you? Just get the pucks on net. And all of a sudden, they're trying to get fancy. They're passing it too much. They're overthinking it. And game four kind of felt like when they scored, when Trocheck finally breaks through, it kind of felt like, I know it was at a much earlier stage in the game, but it kind of felt like when Vetrano scored against Tampa last year, and the Rangers tie the game there. It was like, oh my God, okay, we're back in this. We play like crap, but we're back in this. Let's make a stand. And then right away, you give up the lead again, and it goes the other way, and they score. The positive for the Rangers, Igor's still been Igor. But where's Artemi Panarin? He missed, how many shots did he miss that he had open nets or he had good opportunities and he just missed the net completely or just didn't score? How many times? He's had so many opportunities. The best 5-on-5 line in this series has been the Kid line. And they're not getting enough playing time. And I can't believe it's gotten to this point where I'm angry and upset. Because I remember thinking to myself, and this is a crazy thought, but last year, it was such a surprise. It was such a crazy season. The whole season, there were so many wins that were like, wow, this team has arrived. Or this team, look at this team. Look at what they've done over the course of the season, last season. That made the team feel special. And this year, the expectations come with making it to the conference finals last year. And all of a sudden, there isn't that special moments. There aren't as many special moments in the playoffs, or in the regular season, I should say. And then you get to the playoffs, and the first two games, I was like, oh, if they're just going to dominate in the playoffs also, I may never fell in love the way with this team the way I fell in love with the Rangers team last year or the Knicks team this year. But no. The Rangers face adversity. They have to do this. They have to go home. They lose both games at home. All you had to do was split at home, and you have a commanding lead of the series. Now, I honestly believe, I said this before game four, the winner of game four will win the series. Now, I'm not as like certain about that today as I was after game four or right before game four. The way the Rangers played in game four was awful, and they still, like, again, they could have won that game, and they played terribly. So that's the bright side. You could spin it any different way, but it comes down to game five in New Jersey. You have to go back on the road, and you can't lose. Game five is must win. Must win for the Rangers. And I trust Igor, but Mika Zibanejad, where are you? The Rangers power play, where are you? I mean, Gerard Gallant said he's not going to change up the power play, and I still think that's a mistake. I still think Tarasenko should be on that top power play unit. But he said he's not going to change up the power play. They just need to click. They need to do better. And I agree, but the Rangers haven't played this poorly as they did in game four since the series against Pittsburgh last year. And maybe that's what they needed. Maybe they need their backs to be up against the wall. But if you look at this series, which team looks more like the Rangers team from last year, that every time their backup was up against the wall, they came through and were awesome? Does the Rangers look like that team, or is it really the Devils who look like that team? My thing is the Devils. Like I said, I don't think Schmidt is that good. He's okay. He's a decent player. He's not great. I understand if the Rangers were losing to a better team, get outplayed. That's okay. If they had lost those two games at home where the Rangers played really well, and maybe it would be more cause for concern if the Rangers played really well and still couldn't beat them. But the fact that you let this opportunity slip away, you had a goalie who's not that great, and you had a team that didn't play that well, but you just played worse. It's interesting. I was just watching this. Giannis Antetokounmpo was talking after the game, and I think this was the main point. That we'll talk more about this on a later episode, but I think the main takeaway from what he said, at least what I think, is he said, look, sometimes you get beat. He's like, I don't think we lost this series. We played hard, and I talked about the free throws, and that's probably the reason why they lost, but sometimes you get beat by the other team because the other team is better. If the Devils were better, I tip the cap. Great. The Devils have not been better. The Rangers have been bad. The Rangers aren't getting beat. They're throwing the series. They choked in game three, and they definitely choked in game four. Game three, fine. Borderline. Game four, they choked it away. You had an opportunity at home. Now you have to regain our trust. And when the Rangers have been their backs against the wall, that's when they've been at their best. But I don't know. You have a mediocre goalie in net for the Devils. You're going to have a raucous crowd. The Rangers have to go. They have to punch them in the mouth. I looked at Chris Kreider. He's been the guy every time in the series. The Rangers need a big goal. He's hit first. He scored first. He's been that guy for the Rangers all season and all year and all playoff series and really all last year too. I look at Tarasenko. He's been that guy. But you have to look at Kane. You have to start looking at the kid line to actually produce, not just look great, maybe get more minutes. You have to look at Trouba, the captain, to set the tone. You have to look at the best players, Mika Zibanejad and Artemi Panarin. It's a new series. It's a best of three. Two of the games are going to be in New Jersey. Take back the series. That's the goal for the New York Rangers. By the way, the Knicks are actually favored. Slight favorites over Miami. With home court in the Eastern Conference Finals. Just recency bias. Just remember what Miami looked like in the two playing games. I still think it's going to be a close series. I don't think the Knicks are going to blow them out. I don't think Miami's going to blow them out. Three of the four guys on the TNT crew just took Miami to win the series. But for the Rangers, it starts Thursday night in New Jersey. New season, new series. No quit in New York, right? So come out and play the way you're supposed to play. Take care of business. You're the better team. You're the better goalie. The top players are better. And if you play the way you played for the first two games, and even if New Jersey plays the way they play the second two games, which was better than they played in the first two games, the Rangers will win this series. But don't go home down 3-2. You have to win game five in New Jersey. Have to. There's no two ways about it. That's my opinion. I said the same thing about game four. I know. I still kind of think that way. I've backed off it a little bit. I'm trying to be a little bit more positive that the Rangers can actually somehow salvage this. But I'm hopeful, but I'm not confident. At the end of the day, we have Igor. They don't. That's the biggest difference. That's going to be the difference. Igor's still going to be Igor. It's not like last year when Igor just didn't look like himself in Pittsburgh. We have Igor. We see Igor. We see what he's capable of. It makes it all the more frustrating, but also makes it all the more hopeful. There's always the positive spin. Last thing, and then I'm going to get out of here. Something extremely special happened today in New York and in New York sports. Happened in New Jersey. Aaron Rodgers was introduced as the quarterback of the New York Jets. Just quickly to break down the trade a little further. The Jets obviously gave up the extra pick. It's most likely going to be a first-round pick unless it's just an absolute disaster. Well, the disaster is that Rodgers plays every game and they stink. And the pick becomes like a top 10 pick in the draft that they have to give up because he plays every game. The Jets kind of caved a little bit, but it's okay. After seeing today's introductory press conference, I'm okay with it. This is a guy who's angry. This is a guy who wants revenge. This is a guy who wants to come out and prove to the world, I still got it. I'm still here. I'm still capable. He's sticking around during these OTAs to practice and get to know some of the Jets players. I don't expect him to be there the full time. I don't expect him to be there the full training camp or whatever non-mandatory things there are. But he looks locked in. He looks like he wants to prove a point. And you have a guy who is one of the best quarterbacks. He's the best quarterback of my lifetime to ever be on the Jets. But he's one of the best quarterbacks that I can remember. He's one of my favorite quarterback. And he's a Jet. He's on my team. And watching him come in that building and command the room the way he does, it still won't feel real till he's drawing teams offside and getting other teams caught with 12 men on the field and yelling at his offensive line and yelling at his wide receivers. That's when it'll really feel real. But right now, him standing in that room and him answering the questions and him talking about he chose this team because he thinks... one of the things I mentioned was he never talked about on McAfee about the Jets. He talked about the Packers so much. Today he talked about, I came here, I wanted to come here because I think we can win a Super Bowl. I plan on being here as a long-term commitment. I want to play into my 40s. He's 39 now. I want to play into my 40s. I want to be the starting quarterback at 40. I want to be here for the long run with this team. I think this team is building something special. All the positive things that he said about the Jets... And it's about my team. It's about my New York football Jets. We don't have things like this. We don't get players who are the best player in the league or one of the best players in the league who still could very well be at the top of his game. Is there a disaster scenario? Of course there is. It's the Jets. There's always a disaster scenario. But I don't think this is that. This could be really, really special. And it's... The expectations are now there for them to go on and at least make the playoffs, make a conference championship game, make a Super Bowl. This is the highest expectations the Jets have had in my lifetime. Even when they had Mark Sanchez, the expectations were never this. This is something new and totally different that we've never experienced before as Jets fans. And it's a guy who I love, who I've enjoyed watching. And you're going to go into every Sunday thinking, we should win this game. We can win this game. And you're never down. You're never out of a game. I saw this stat. Aaron Rodgers in his career is 80-20 when his team gives up 20 points or less. The Jets defense, on average, last year allowed only 18 points per game. This Jets team is not just Aaron Rodgers. It's a special team around him. It's a really good team. He gets it. He wants to behave. He feels like he's in a new place. He's rejuvenated. He won't take number 12. He's not as arrogant yet as he's been. He's taking number 8 out of respect to Joe Namath and seeing him there, standing there with the jersey, smiling, all that stuff. I trust Joe Douglas. I'm still on the fence about Robert Saleh, but hey, Aaron Rodgers was able to win a Super Bowl with Mike McCarthy. He has a special connection, clearly, with Nathaniel Hackett. I don't know. The Jets players are excited. This could be something really special. All right. That's my Rodgers piece. That's my Rodgers take. It finally starts to sink in a little bit. I'm really happy. I'm really excited. We have the quarterback, at least for the next year. And we'll take it 1 year at a time. We'll see how it goes. Right now, it's all positive. I love the Knicks. Let's go, Rangers. I love this Knicks team so much. I can't reiterate that enough. The playing for each other, the hard work. it's funny because Miami is a very similar team in that sense. So when you start to look ahead at that series, it's like, yeah, it's going to be both of these teams that are easy to like, easy to root for, play tough, play physical. So it's going to be a tough series. I know that, but I'm going to try and enjoy it as much as possible. Orange and blue skies. You saw the press conference. Mitchell Robinson and RJ, their banter back and forth. Jalen Brunson and Josh Hart clearly have a special relationship. And even Julius Randle, he came back out onto the floor and was on the bench for the Knicks in street clothes after he got hurt. Like, there's something important about that. So I think there's something special here. They're favorites to go to the conference finals. They are the favorites right now to be in the conference finals. That doesn't mean anything. It's just Vegas odds. But to me, it means something. I don't know. That's all I'm going to talk about. By the way, I noticed, I don't know when I started saying see ya at the end of the podcast. It's not a Michael K thing. It's not a baseball thing. I don't even know what it is. But I'm going to try and break that habit because it's unoriginal, just because it's not mine. It's a cool way to end the podcast. But maybe I'll come up with my own thing. So until next time, please like, subscribe, follow, share it with a friend. I appreciate you. And let's go Knicks. Huge game for the Rangers tonight in New Jersey. Let's go Rangers. And have a lovely rest of whatever you are doing. Thank you for listening.
You were the best nights of my life. You got the light that always shines. I miss the way that you move and the way I get high when you take me to your eyes, like I'm standing in the sky. I see your subway cars and road graffiti. I breathe your air when I land in another city. I'll be that one that's got you printed on my bones. Yeah, you're all I know. Everywhere I go, oh, oh, I change it all, oh, oh. Always on my own, oh, oh, and I'm still New York. Drive down Riverside, see the birds flying on the high line. With the sidewalks burning, we pray for rain in July. I want the Yankees 99, yeah. And the Knicks on a sold out night. When the curtains close and the Broadway streets are alive, hey. I need your heartbeat close, don't you ever leave me. And I breathe your air when I land in another city. And I'll be that one that's got you printed on my bones. Yeah, you're all I know. Everywhere I go, oh, oh, I ain't changed it all, oh, oh. Always on my road, oh, oh, and I'm still New York. You're the only oh, oh, that I'll ever know, oh, oh. My concrete walls, I'm still New York.
Yeah, BK born and raised, I was godsent. I used to hit them courts yard and prospect. Take them long walks on my time spin. Just a kid with that empire state of mindset. Kick flipping off a blind deck. Dipping from the New York City's finest, yeah. Said I've been up on my New York shit. Walking down the block with my New York bitch. I can never leave my city, ain't nothing like it. Even if I do though, I can never hide it. Top down on the west side when I'm driving. East side be the only side that I'm riding. And I'm still New York.
ain't changed at all, no. I ain't changed at all. I'm still young.